Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Well, today is going to be fun, speaking to Ruby Dee Filippa. Whether it's touring with her band Ruby Dee and the Snake Handlers or serving up a backyard barbecue, Ruby Dee always has something cooking. From the very first taste of her feisty and spicy sound to the last bite of the crown-pleasing dish, Ruby Dee is making fans rave and crave for her winning recipes. Touring extensively with her band for the past 10 years, serving up tasty rockabilly, western swing, and classic roots music has helped Ruby Dee gain a love for many of the flavors that make up Americana cuisine. Growing up in Northern California and Texas, as well as living in Alaska and South America, have added to the experience that she shares in her new book, Ruby's Juke Joint Americana Cookbook. Hi, Ruby Dee.
Hi there.
Well, this is a real thrill to talk to you, not only because of your cooking, but also because of your music, and it's like a twofold thing, which both comes out of creativity, and I'm assuming you are a very creative person.
More or less, I think so.
Yeah, so first of all, with your book, Ruby's Juke Joint, Americana Cookbook. Okay, so what is Americana cooking? I can understand Chinese cooking, Italian, you know, the cultural, but Americana?
It's the same as Americana music, if you know anything about that. The origins of Americana music came from other countries around the world. And when those cultures touched base and landed in the Americas, you know, their music altered some landscape around them. You've got hillbilly music, folk music, blues, jazz, bluegrass, country, even rockabilly. I mean, you can, the list goes on. That's all Americana.
Uh-huh.
You can apply the same concept to food, and I do. So, you know, folks came here from many different countries around the world and brought their recipes with them. And once they arrived, those recipes changed to fit the ingredients and other cultures around them. So, for instance, you have Northeast chowders. Those are originally from Scotland,
uh-huh.
for instance, or Southwest chilies, or Northwest smoked salmon, Southern barbecue. The list goes on that way. All these different cultures and all these different flavors, but they're all Americana.
So what are some of your favorite Americana recipes?
Well, you know, it really depends on the time of day and the season that you ask me. At different times of year, I have different favorites. In the summertime, I love shredded cucumbers and for salads and things that are bright and light. In the wintertime, I tend to hunker down with, you know, heavier meats and anything with bacon in it.
Sure.
Anything roasted, things I can throw in the oven.
Uh-huh.
Compared to summertime where things I can throw on the griddle.
Let's talk about backyard barbecuing and Texas style and actually, you know, it's grilling. It's interesting because the word barbecue, it depends on what region you come from or what area. It means something totally different. I came from Canada, and barbecuing really was what we call grilling here in Texas. And barbecue sauce was not what, you know, what we have here. So let's talk about Texas grilling barbecue and what your concept is of that.
Well, sure, and actually I don't do what is traditional Texas barbecue by itself. I add sauce. I don't go with the vinegar-based sauce so much as I do a marinade, like a slathered marinade
uh-huh.
for the meat a couple of days in advance, and then I'll throw that on the grill. And I may brush the meat with additional sauce or not. Really, at that point, then it's then up to the flavors of the wood chips that I'm using to permeate the meat.
Uh-huh.
So I really rely on two different styles of barbecue, if you will. And there are purists from different places in the country who will poo-poo what I just said.
Yep.
That's not barbecue. My brother being one of them.
That's too funny. So when did you get started in cooking? Is this something that goes way back from childhood or...?
It does. It does. I grew up around a lot of different cultural influences in food. I have one side of the family that hails from the East Coast, and so they had all the those cultural influences, and one side of the family that hails from the South. And so I had a combination of, you know, the chowders and pickled vinegar pies and pickled things from back east, but then also lots of cream sauces and barbecue sauces and things in gravy and things in pies and things like that from the south. And I grew to love a little bit of everything. And then being in my band, we travel around the country. We travel over the world. Uh-huh. But when we go around the country, I really get excited about the different cultural experiences that we have through food in the different places we go. So I just keep learning about different dishes and loving preparing my versions of them at home, really.
And, you know, I really like what you said, preparing your versions, because I know that you're like I am. I think I do have some measuring spoons, but I'd really have to look for them. And I'm not sure if I have the whole set. And it's like, I think I need to add this or add that. And that's what I'm gathering your Americana cookbook is about, too.
Yeah, and actually, I'm so glad that you said that, because that's one of the things that drives my husband crazy when I cook at home. And I make a dish that he loves. He says, oh, you have to make that again. I say, well, I don't remember exactly what I did.
My soups are like that. Because, you know, leftovers, I put in leftovers and then maybe put some kind of a stock and stuff. And, oh, my gosh, the soup is so good, but I can never, ever, ever make it again like that.
Right. You'll add a little something different, a different spice that you don't normally add, and that changes the flavor, and you might not remember what you added, let alone a portion. And in fact, that was part of the problem I had with the book, was in writing down my recipes, I was actually cementing them in time and space. Like, this is the way to prepare it. When actually, I change it on a regular basis. So,
you know, I wondered about that, Ruby, is, you know, you do, knowing the way you do cook, like I do, that, you know, like 1 tablespoon of salt or whatever, you know, it's like, wow, how did you really, you must have really had to pick on your brain to really get those portions and probably do some sampling too, testing to see if that really is right.
Well, and not only that, but editing. I found when I was editing the book that there were certain ingredients that I completely left out that I'm so glad we went through the editorial process. Like, oh, that wouldn't have tasted very good without the key ingredient.
That is too funny. That is too funny. So you've grown up in Northern California and Texas and lived in Alaska and South America. And, wow, so you bring in a lot of different cultures into your cooking. And besides, as you said, with all the traveling. And so are some of your favorites, you know, what are some of your favorites that you've been able to collect over the time?
Well, my absolute favorite dish of all time is not just one dish, it's a variety of dishes. You know, but beyond that, pies.
Oh.
Anything that you can make a pie out of, that's my favorite thing. So, for instance, I will get on an apple pie kick, and I'll start making all different types of apple pies. Or I'll make a vegetable pot pie, and I'll add some chicken to it and put some mustard sauce over the top. Or so pretty much anything you can make that you can make into a pie, that's my favorite dish.
Interesting. And you make your own crust, of course.
Of course.
Yes. Of course. You had mentioned earlier vinegar pie, and I think that that must be a very regional or cultural type of pie. And so tell our listeners what vinegar pie is. You know, I'm visualizing a gallon of white vinegar poured into a pie crust, and I don't think that's right.
No. Like I said, anything you can make into a pie, so that sounds like a challenge. A vinegar pie is really a meat-based pie that has vinegar as one of the curing properties in the meat. And then you mince the meats and so forth, and you make a vinegar-based meat pie. And same thing with vegetables. You could do a vinegar-based vegetable pie, but it is part of the curing process. And I believe it comes from back east, before refrigeration.
Okay. I'm having a hard time with this concept. So curing. So is it quite a vinegary taste then? Does it have that pungent taste to it in the end?
It would have a pungency to it, but then also other flavors would be added in to balance that. So, for instance, if you did a mincemeat pie, for instance, with a vinegar base, you would also have some spices and sugar in there to balance out the vinegar flavors.
Okay, got it. Now, Ruby, you originally wrote all these recipes and stories in this book because of some cognitive therapy. Let's talk about that and tell our listeners how this all started.
Sure. I had a scooter accident coming up on 4 years ago. I was on my scooter, had a full face helmet and everything. I was very careful because as a singer, I needed to protect my jaw. But the driver of a car didn't see me and drove me off the road, and I woke up about 5 hours later in the hospital. And as a result of the head injury, I had cognitive disability, and I still suffer from it slightly. I have difficulty finding words sometimes, but at the time, it was really difficult. I couldn't put sentences together, let alone be able to have this conversation with you. And so as part of my cognitive therapy, I started writing down the recipes to my dishes that I make so that I could sit at home in the privacy and the quiet of my home and practice accessing words because that was the most difficult thing. I would be in the conversation and I would stop and not be able to find the word that I was looking for. Some people say, oh, I have that. That's just age. And, well, okay, but it was extreme. And so it was really good practice for me. And after about 3 months of writing, and I was writing little stories to go along with each recipe to also, you know, give an idea about what the recipe was about and how it connected to my life and what makes it Americana. And then I realized about 3 or 4 months into writing that I have a theme. And I have a book. So I kept writing and finished the book and started shopping around and found a taker, and the rest is history.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, the back of the book has this really, really neat CD. Tell our listeners about it. I loved it. I was just dancing around in the kitchen.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah, it's fun.
Well, because I describe Americana cuisine as the same thing as Americana music, I figured rather than have to describe Americana music in detail to people, I thought it would be nice to show people who might not know too much about Americana music or cuisine the music side. Okay, you bought the book, you might not know anything about Americana music, here's a sample. So these are some of my favorite bands in Americana music today. Of course, a number of them are friends of mine, and I love them. I love their music, and it's a lot of different kinds of styles of the Americana genre. So rather than the sensitive singer-songwriter stuff that most people would think of, I've got some pretty rockin' songs on here from different groups that I adore, and it makes it a lot of fun. It makes it, you know, fun to put on the CD and rock around the kitchen, like you said.
I had a couple of glasses of wine, and hey, all of a sudden the recipe comes out and pretty interesting. That's fun.
You can taste that. You can taste the fun that you had, you know, running around the kitchen having some, having a good time.
Exactly.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast, as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Ruby D, author of Ruby's Jute Joint Americana Cookbook and singer-songwriter with Ruby D and the Snake Handlers. As you've heard so far, Ruby D is a very talented and creative person. Not only does she excel in cooking, but she has been Grammy nominated. Stay tuned because there's just so much more from Ruby D. Okay, so who are the Ruby Dee and the Snake Handlers?
Well, that's my band, mm-hmm. the Snake Handlers. We are what I call a high-octane Americana roots and rockabilly act. We're based out of Austin, and we started in Seattle, and we found that we were touring for the most part from Austin and playing for the most part in the Southwest, and we decided it was too hard for us to drive all the way or fly all the way from Seattle to start our tours and end our tours here. So we moved here, and we've been here for 4 years, having a great time. But Austin's been great to us. We love it here.
So the band also came with you, so the whole group moved here?
Well, no, just the guitar player, who happens to be my husband.
Oh, okay.
And we found a new rhythm section here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was that hard to find?
Oh, no.
I don't imagine in Austin.
Austin's got a pretty deep bench. There's a lot of really great people to choose from. And in fact, we've had difficulty in making our decisions. Oh, gosh, who do we play with? We should have worse problems.
No kidding. So tell me about the Grammy nomination.
Well, we didn't make it to the final five. But we did get nominated in the preliminary round for Best Americana Album, us and 134 other amazing, what I call, you know, what the world calls Americana bands. And the folks who made it to the final five are people that more people would recognize as Americana music today. Imee Lou Harris, Levon Helm, people like that. We were pretty much, I think we were the only plugged-in, truly rockabilly rockin' group in that 100, out of that 135.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, we're so pleased to have been in that company. We're still shocked. We're still reeling. We didn't think we would make it to the final five, but the fact that we made it to the 135 was phenomenal.
That's big too, isn't it? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. So how did you get interested in this type of music in the first place?
Well, that's a good question. I grew up on the back porch. You know, we would have barbecues or whatever. We'd have people around, and there was always a fiddle and a banjo and a bunch of guitars, and people would show up and pick up different instruments and start playing music. So I grew up with the more hillbilly country side of things. And then later on, as I grew older, I got into the more plugged in. I got into rockabilly music a little bit. I got into punk rock, really, which led me down the paths of no return. And I came back to my roots with the plugged in attitude. And then Jorge, my husband, he comes from a long line of rockabilly musicians. Not that he's related to them, but that he's played in a number of rockabilly bands over the years. And he really opened my eyes to that whole scene. So that's how I came to the type of music that we do today. It's really my country roots and his rockabilly roots combined together.
Wow, that's great. So is this something that you continue to do for, you feel in the future that you're just going to continue singing and being in the band?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's you know, like you said in the very beginning, it's the interview about the creativity side of things. When I cook, I'm being creative there, and I'm sharing that with people, and I love sharing food with people. It's the exact same thing with my music. I get an idea for a song, and I'll write it out, and then I love seeing the song blossom when we share it with the band, and it becomes more three-dimensional, and then to take it one step further and share it with people in the audience playing it live. I love all of that. So
you have a recent release called Live from Austin, Texas, and it's been on the charts for quite some time.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's still charting now, but it was on the Third Coast Music Charts and on the AMA charts, the Americana Music Association charts. And I don't know what else, maybe something else too, but we tracked those. And yeah, it did pretty well. And I mean, that's the album that got us the Grammy nomination.
That's great. Are you seeing other albums in the future, near future?
Oh, yes. I keep pestering Jorge, that's my husband, to have us do a Christmas album. I just think that's so much fun. So we may do one for this next year. And then I'm always writing, and we've got a backlog of songs that we haven't even touched yet that we'll be introducing to the band and to folks coming up soon.
So you write your own music?
Yes, I do.
And you just mentioned something that I'm wondering about. You said presented to the folks. So is this something that you do is you test the songs that you have written at the gigs that you perform at to see what the response is?
Yes, everybody is a guinea pig in my book.
Yeah, okay. I wondered how that works.
Whether you're in the kitchen or on the stage, either way.
And do you find that some of the, you know, the presentations that you do give, I can't imagine in food, but let's say music, because it's so targeted, that the response isn't really what you expected?
Well, yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. Most of the shows that we play, you know, I have a list of songs that are soft and pretty and beautiful and poignant, you know, waltzes and things like that we just don't play. We never get the chance to play because so many audiences want us to play fast and play hard and play rock and so they can get up and dance and move and work off whatever it is they need to work off. And then what happens is we'll go to a show expecting to play like that, and people will ask for something slow. And it's like, you're kidding. Well, you never play that song. Okay, we'll give it a try, but
yeah.
I'm warning you.
Interesting. That's really interesting. I guess that your following, and which I'm assuming a lot of your following go to the different places that you have your performances at, know you for a certain type of music, and that's what their expectations are.
That's true.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I'm just thinking of some of the oldies that were really popular many years ago are not wanting to conform to what the audience really wants, that they wanted to bring in some new songs. But the audience is an old audience, and they want to hear what you were known for. Do you find that?
Yes. And, in fact, one of my favorite artists, okay, that's my head injury. Neil Young.
Uh-huh.
Neil Young. I've seen him live, and I've seen him stop the show because people in the audience are calling out whatever his standards are, whatever their old favorites are. And he wrote those songs 25, 30 years ago.
Right.
So he really wants to play something new that is new to and true to his heart today.
Uh-huh.
And he will stop the show and leave the stage. Because those people who are calling out those songs aren't allowing him to play the songs that he really wants to play. Now, I don't have that luxury. but we will, every now and then, sneak in something that people are not expecting us to play. And like you said, sometimes the response is great, and sometimes it's all a little like, cricket, what are you doing? What are you playing?
So how do you take these little rejections, I guess you would call them? How does that feel?
Well, I'm pretty good at sassing the audience. So I sort of strong-arm them into being nice about whatever their response is.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that we ever really have anything totally fall flat. But what we do is we know to play that song in a different atmosphere,
uh-huh,
on a different type
uh-huh
of stage. For instance, we play on a regular basis at the Driscoll
uh-huh
Hotel here in town. We also play at the Continental Club, two totally different types of venues, two totally different
that
shows.
Yeah.
At the Continental Club, we turn it up.
Uh-huh.
At the Driscoll,
uh-huh,
we play a little more relaxed.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So are you still doing a lot of traveling?
Not so much right now, but that's because I've been working so hard on the book.
Uh-huh.
We do have some trips planned in the near future. For instance, in April, we'll be going to Viva Las Vegas.
Great.
That's a big rockabilly festival there.
Uh-huh.
We have a small tour set for the end of August going up to Green Bay.
Uh-huh.
And I'm working on setting us up in a really fun. I've never been to Norway, Sweden, Finland, places like that. We go to Europe, but we've never been up to the north. And so I'm setting up a little tour in that area, which is really exciting.
Oh, wow. So you do set up your own tours? You don't have an agent? You're the
No, we don't have an agent.
All right.
Which is actually more good cognitive therapy for me.
I can well imagine. Yeah. And besides, I think that I think that's a good idea anyway, and it just gets you to talk with the people at the other end and really know what their expectations are too, instead of getting a second or third hand.
There is that, but also it is quite different setting up a tour in Europe than setting up a tour in the States. In the States, I have to handle everything, the hotels, the transportation, everything, as well as the booking and the media and the everything. In Europe, all I have to do is connect with the agent and let them know exactly pretty much where we want to go, and then they set it up from there.
Oh,
great. They handle the hotels. They handle the transportation. It's relaxing, more relaxing.
Good. And, oh, one more thing about cooking. I just about forgot. Rachel Ray, you had the bragging rights to be on that show.
Yes, I did.
And tell us about it, how this came about.
Well, sure. Because I've been handling the media and the PR, because I promote the band for so many years, I've become pretty good at it. I have a PR company for my book, but before they do their little campaign, I already had been sending out press releases and badgering different cooking shows and radio shows and TV shows and so forth about my book. In fact, I think you were one of the people I was badgering.
And it worked.
Yes, it did. And the Rachel Ray people got back to me and they said, okay, we're interested. You've got a book. You're a musician. That sounds interesting. Talk to us. So I promoted myself and they accepted it. What happened in the end was different than what I expected. I ended up going on the show, and to tell you the truth, I feel like I was more set dressing than it really being about my book. But that's to be understood. Rachel Ray is a corporation. She sells her own books, her own stuff, and she's not in the business to sell me. Just the fact that I was on the show is, you know,
it's
half the battle right there. That was great.
Of course. So, Ruby, your website address.
Yes. For my book, it's rubysjukejoint.com, and that's R-U-B-Y-S, jukejoint.com.
And it's J-U-K-E, joint.
Yes.
.com. This has been a real pleasure, Ruby, to chat with you, talk about your new cookbook, Ruby's Duke Joint Americana Cookbook, and also about your music, Ruby D and the Snake Handlers, and you are one talented lady.
Thank you so much, and thank you for allowing me to badger you into doing this.
It's been fun. It's been fun, and listeners, this is a really neat cookbook. I have to tell you, I wanted to do a review for it, and of course, we kind of have a little rule around here that we have to test at least 3 recipes, and it was really difficult for me to choose which ones, and since then I've made some others. It's a really neat, good cookbook with, to me, it's like down-home cooking. There's nothing fancy about it. It's just plain, good old recipes that you can buy the ingredients at any local grocery store and probably find most of them in your pantry. So it's a really good Americana cookbook. And, hey, the CD in the back, you just got to listen to it. It is so much fun. And, of course, Ruby's the music, too. You can check her out on her website, as she said, rubysjukejoint.com. And I encourage you to listen to some of her music. I think that you will really enjoy it. Thanks again, Ruby.
Thank you so much. And hopefully I'll see you in the kitchen.
You sure will, and probably in the audience, too. So I think this could be a twofold. Thanks for listening, and this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.